Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
Now, from QAnon to the Great Replacement, anti-vax to anti-Semitism, contrails, UFOs, hot takes on celebrity deaths, conspiracy theories have been with us for centuries. How they start, who gets sucked in, how they spread and how to counter them are the subjects of a new book called Web of Lies, The Lure and Danger of Conspiracy Theories. And author Aoife Gallagher, who's a research analyst at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, joins me in studio. Aoife, you're very welcome. Thank you very much. Congratulations on your new book. We'll start with the basics. Mm-hmm. What is a conspiracy theory?
Good place to start, I think, because people will often kind of conflate conspiracies and conspiracy theories. And I suppose the very kind of basic difference between them is that a conspiracy is speculative, right? So a lot of the time, conspiracy theories are speculative. So conspiracies, you know, conspiracies that have been proven to be true are normally based on an evidence basis, or there's an investigation done and they're proven to be true. Conspiracy theories, on the other hand, as I say, are speculative, and there tends to be a lack of actual evidence that they're true. So they're kind of based on people guessing, I suppose, and belief more than actual truth.
Okay, and you ask that question, you know, or you pose that question about the lure. What is the lure? What is attractive?
Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of opened the book with a chapter essentially kind of looking at the psychology of conspiracy belief, which I think is something that is very important to understand, because essentially we're all susceptible to conspiracy theories. I think sometimes there's this idea that it's only people who are, you know, less educated, or, you know, people are crazy for believing in conspiracy theories. But actually, our brains are kind of built for it in a lot of ways. And there's kind of cognitive functions in our brains that can be very easily tricked into having people kind of be drawn into this. And I talked to a couple of psychologists as well, which was really interesting. And they kind of told me that people tend to kind of embrace conspiracy theories when certain psychological needs in their life are not being met, right? And there's kind of three kind of core ones. And the first one is the need to feel safe and secure in the world that you live in. The second is the need for knowledge, the need to know what's going on in the world and kind of feel like you know what's going on.
Mm-hmm, fully informed.
Yes, exactly. And then the third one is the need to feel good as part of your social circle. So when these needs are not being met, people tend to kind of be drawn to conspiracy theories. And what they tend to do is give people fairly simple answers to the kind of chaos of the world, right? So instead of trying to kind of pick apart the real complexities and the nuance of why things are kind of so chaotic and wild, they'll give these kind of overarching simplistic answers. Everything is, you know, the world is crazy because there is a small group of people who are controlling everything behind the scenes, and there's a sinister plot in place.
Mm-hmm. So if you're asking those questions, you go online, for example, and you mm-hmm. have your aha moment. Now I understand it mm-hmm. because I have my answer. I have the missing piece
exactly.
of the jigsaw.
And that kind of secret knowledge is really powerful. It kind of makes people think that they have knowledge that other people don't. And that can be, it can be pretty empowering for people mm-hmm. to think that they have access to secrets, I suppose.
And how much information is there around whether men or women are more susceptible?
I don't know if there's any kind of good data around that, or if there is, it's not something that I'm aware of. But like, as I said, there tends to be the idea that everyone that believes in them are crazy or stupid. And I kind of really wanted to dispel that myth mm. as well.
But a lot of the characters that you introduce us to in the book are male, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think, I mean, maybe there is, as I say, I don't kind of want to speak outside of actually having data to support it. Mm. And I suppose kind of certain conspiracy theories are more susceptible, males are more susceptible to it. There's I suppose, you know, a big element that feeds into the kind of alt-right, which is essentially the kind of online version of the far right, is very much rooted in anti-feminism mm-hmm. and misogyny. And that would, you know, be, you know, I think men would be more in tune with
that. When it comes to suspicions around feminism, for mm. the people who subscribe to that, what is the nature of the threat that feminism seems to pose for them?
Essentially, they kind of believe that feminism is the reason why, or that feminism is the cause of all the world's problems, I suppose, in a lot of ways, and that feminism pushed women into work and it, you know, destroyed the family structure. And a lot of the kind of inherent you know, thinking within far right movements is the idea that the traditional family structure is the backbone of the nation. So feminism obviously, say, encourages women to work. It pushes for things like abortion rights and kind of disintegrates that kind of idea of the family structure. So that's kind of one of the real kind of inherent kind of beliefs there.
And you talk as well about there being a grain of truth behind a lot of the conspiracy theories that we see around the place at the moment. And I want to just talk to you about QAnon, and maybe you might tell us what that is and how it started.
Yeah, QAnon is a very kind of complicated and lurid conspiracy theory, and it started in October of 2017. And it really started with a person or people, and I kind of explore that element of it in the book as well, that were posting anonymously online on a couple of different websites, one called 4chan, one called 8chan. Again, I kind of go into both those websites as well in the book. And they were posting claiming that they were a high-level government insider in the US Department of Energy, and that they had secrets that they wanted to share with the world. And over the space of about 4 years, they left 5,000 drops, they're called drops, I'm using kind of air quotes there, on 8chan and 4chan. And, you know, they kind of range from, you know, a couple of words to, you know, really long, meandering, kind of complicated phrases and things like that. And people essentially dedicated a lot of time to decoding these drops and trying to figure out what was behind them. It wasn't like this person was kind of saying, this is what's happening. It was more like you had to decode this to kind of figure out what was going on.
So it became a game. It became something that you were waiting for the next installment of.
Very much so. And the kind of power of QAnon, I describe it in the book as a conspiracy theory soup, because essentially you can kind of drop any conspiracy theory into QAnon that will become part of the mix. But it does have a kind of through line, I suppose. And the through line is the idea that during Trump's presidency, that he was fighting a secret war against the deep state. And the deep state is within QAnon, it is kind of positioned as a group of elite liberals and Democrats that are all involved in some kind of child trafficking and paedophilia. And that is the kind of through line of it. So, you know, QAnon, even after Trump's presidency, you know, during the pandemic, actually, QAnon kind of exploded, and it really infiltrated a lot of different conspiracy theory movements. So it kind of became ingrained in COVID-19 conspiracy theories. People might remember actually the anti-lockdown protest here in Dublin at the end of February 2021. People probably remember it because there was a firework shot at Gardaí and the Gardaí bat in charge of the crowd. But there was a report in the Sunday Times, you know, talking to women who were at that that march, and they spoke about, this is probably a little bit close to home, but they spoke about people in RTE torturing children in order to extract adrenochrome, which is a kind of substance within QAnon lure again, that they believe is an anti-aging substance.
So all of those theories are linked back to QAnon.
Yes, exactly.
You can't talk about any of this and not talk about social media. Like, this stuff thrives because of social media, right?
Yeah, exactly. I suppose the kind of inherent, you know, business model of social media is to keep people's eyes on screens for as long as possible. And a lot of social media, you know, platforms have kind of incorporated, I suppose if you think back to the way Facebook used to be, and you used to go onto Facebook and you'd see the posts that, you know, your friends made, and they would be in chronological order. But now, instead, a lot of the time it is posts with the highest engagement that are kind of floating to the top of people's news feeds. And a lot of the time, conspiracy theories and false information and misinformation are the things that generate the most engagement.
Because so it becomes self-perpetuating.
Exactly, yeah. And then the algorithms that are involved in these platforms as well also kind of tend to push people in certain directions. So, for example, there was an investigation done by The Guardian that looked at people, if they joined anti-lockdown groups during the pandemic, say they were frustrated with pandemic measures, as a lot of people were, they would be then, this is on Facebook, they would be recommended to join a QAnon group because the same kind of things were being talked about in each group. So this is kind of, you know, social media really kind of is the rabbit hole effect of conspiracy theories. Like, social media is such a big part of that.
Okay, and did you come to any sort of conclusion on how that can be fixed, or does it need to be fixed?
Yeah, I mean, talking about social media, we're getting to the point now that I think a lot of people realise that there needs to be some kind of regulation of social media. And even, you know, here we have the online safety and Media Bill, sorry, I can't remember the name, but the OSM Orville and the Digital Services Act as well, which are both coming into effect over the next while. And I think there's a bit of a wait and see thing, I think, when it comes to things like that, to see how it'll work. It's a very, very complicated world trying to regulate something that kind of crosses borders. The other kind of, you know, I suppose the solution, I suppose, that I would be most, you know, that I would kind of speak about most would be education and the need for media literacy. In other words, kind of teaching people how media is created, so then they can essentially empower people with, you know, being able to choose what's good information from false information.
Yeah, make an informed decision about what they're consuming.
Yeah.
Well, Aoife, the book is out now, published by Gill Books. It's written by Aoife Gallagher. Aoife, thank you very much for coming in. Called Web of Lies, The Lure and Danger of Conspiracy Theories. Elaine Byrne will be with us next with advice on wills and probate.
Today with Claire Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.